This is Glorious Food at KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington, your show about all things food on the beautiful, green, verdant Olympic Peninsula. I'm your host, Mara Lathrop. Today, we're going to talk with Will O'Donnell, manager of the Port Townsend Farmers Market. We'll harvest nettles out behind the back fence and turn them into an Italian nettle soup. And of course, the Farm Report. The Port Townsend Farmers Market is open for business every Saturday from April through December, from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. over on Tyler Street in Uptown. Will O'Donnell is the director and the market manager, and he is joining me here today to talk about the Port Townsend Farmers Market. Hi, Will.
Hi, Mara.
What is new for the Port Townsend Farmers Market for 2015?
Well, we have four new vendors this year, and we are going to be exceptionally full. We're exceptionally full every year, but I feel like we're more exceptionally full this year than usual.
And are these new vendors, are they people who are growing things, making things out of food, or making other things?
Well, we only take people who grow or make things, and we prefer people who make things out of things they grow.
Yes.
So we have, I think, most of that covered. We've got somebody growing mushrooms this year.
Great.
Woodland Treasures Farms, which is Adam and Rebecca. Rebecca sells cheese for Mount Townsend Creamery, and she and her partner Adam have been building their farm over time, and this year they're going to be bringing shiitake and oyster mushrooms, bags of mushrooms for people to take home, and then other mushroom products. We've got a new farmer out off Jacob Miller. On a True Farm is Max Lindert and family, mostly Max, and he moved here a little while back from northern Wisconsin.
I know Max.
Oh, you know Max.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, he's a nice guy, and I went out and visited his place a couple weeks ago. He's got some great greenhouses. He's doing some interesting things that we don't have at the market. He's got a bed of baby ginger,
ooh,
which we should see sometime this summer. He's doing, you know, kind of a standard mix of vegetables, but to start off the year, he's got bags of greens where you buy the bag with the soil in it, and then you can snip off the greens as they still grow, which is a neat little thing to take home from the market.
Absolutely.
We've got our first butchery at the market, which is La Femme Boucherie, which is Megan Trennery. She's doing cured meats, like her own bacon, her own sausages. She's doing some other interesting things, lard and stock and things like that. She's buying all local pork. And so that's been exciting to see that. We've been wanting to have more of a custom meat vendor for a while. We've got a few meat growers,
right,
farmers, but not the processor. And then this year we've got a cobbler of sorts. Mike Ferguson is going to, his business is Soul's Journey, and he's going to be custom making leather shoes. He does the fitting at the market. He'll have some samples and then some other leather goods. And then he's hoping to do fittings and then go back to his shop and make the shoes. And then you can pick them back up at the market, which should be neat.
Well, every one of those people sounds like they're bringing something really interesting to the market that hasn't already been there. What is the process of applying to sell at the Port Townsend Farmers Market and getting a spot?
Yeah, it changes every year. We've had some years where we can accept new vendors and some years where we have a bunch of open spaces. The determining factor for new spaces is just who comes back and who doesn't. And then also kind of how we rearrange to use the spaces. When I first took over managing the market in 2009, we tried to get in as many vendors as we could in there. And what happened is the market got a little clogged that made it harder for customers to go through. So then since then, we've been trying to, you know, keep as many vendors, have as much product, but also make enough space so everybody's comfortable so we can have as many people as possible without people feeling like they're trapped or they get tangled up. That's part of the reason why we banned dogs in the last year is because when there's 2,000, 3,000 more people in the summertime and dog leashes are everywhere and dogs are wrapping around people, it can get a little bit dangerous.
Okay.
So this last year, we had a pool of 16 applicants to the market. The application period is from December through February 1st, and we were only able to accept four, which we were bummed about. We had some really good applicants this year, but those were all the spaces we had.
So I'm going to change the topic now because
sure,
this is something that a lot of people wonder about.
Mm-hmm.
What is or what are the best ways to maximize my food shopping dollars when I'm going to the farmer's market.
My gut reaction to it is just to say, buy the things that are in season. Don't buy them when they're at the beginning of the season, because that's when farmers are going to ask for the highest price. Collinwood grows, I think, at the beginning of the market. They're going to even have crops like zucchini. They're not going to bring them to the Port Townsend Farmers Market in April, because they can get such a high price for April zucchini, and then they'll even have like May cucumbers and some other products.
Yeah.
They can get such a high price for those in Seattle, they bring them all there. But we do have things like the first, you know, asparagus, all those precious crops. When they first come on, they're going to be at their most expensive. They're also going to sell out really fast. So there's no incentive for the farmers to bring the price down. But when you have like the middle of summer, when you've got a lot of tomatoes, a lot of berries and things like that, you have to buy by the flat. If you buy by the flat, you'll get the very best price for the very best product. And then you are competing with supermarket prices at that time. But when things are just new and precious, you know, oftentimes many of those farmers aren't even eating the first asparagus or the first raspberries. They'll nibble on a few, but they want to sell those for the highest price they can.
And what about like the time of day? I mean, can you...
There's no
difference. Like if you wait till like 1:30 when people still have some stuff left...
If you have
can you make a deal if you smile and...
If you have a good relationship with that farmer and with that vendor where you've been buying from them regularly and you come at the end, but if you only come at the end is kind of like a...
Like a vulture?
End of the market vulture, then I know that the farmers are not going to be in a huge hurry to give you a big discount.
Okay, well,
you
know, that's good advice.
It's just building relationship. If you build a good relationship with your farmer, they're going to be more inclined to want to get you as much produce as they can. You know, there's no promises on that. But I know when I had a farm, if we had a really good customer, you know, and we had something else, like, here, throw you an extra head of broccoli or something like that. So just be the best customer you can be.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What's really of special interest, like on a regular Saturday market, for like all these different segments of the population that come through, the families with young children, the foodies, the tourists? What does the market really provide for different people in different ways?
I think we cater to all those folks. Let me talk about it this way, because a lot of, you know, I hear a lot of times from people saying, oh, well, the market must just be for tourists now. You know, it seems like when I go out there, it's mostly tourists, and usually it's majority locals. And the majority of our sales are farm sales, and those all go to local folks. We were at, I think, over $600,000 in local produce sales last year.
Wow.
Out of just over 1 million total sales. So the majority of that is going almost directly to local folks in the community. You know, in the summertime, certainly we have more visitors. And, you know, that's why we have a lot of food and arts and crafts. And those folks all do best in the summertime when there's a mix. But when I first started selling at the market back in 2000, we couldn't even get the local folks to come out and shop until we got the food vendors. So when I hear people complain about, oh, the food vendors and the craft, it's all for the out-of-town folks. It wasn't until we had cheese sticks from Pan de Mor and the salmon wagon and all those things that brought out a lot of the locals. And I kind of see that as more of the gateway drugs, especially the $1.50 cheese sticks are the gateway drugs into becoming a local food shopper. You come with your family or you come with your friends who are visiting from out of town. Who eat a cheese stick, who hang out, have a cup of coffee, watch the music, and they get into this ritual of liking to do this. Maybe they go to the upscale pastry next. They can go to Kellen's Croissants, or they can go to Victor and Olga's Pupusas or something like that. And then they just sort of get into the community, and then they look at the produce and they start buying the produce and they build a relationship. And soon it's been 5 years and they're spending, you know, the majority of their vegetable and produce budget at the market every week. And that's how we've seen it grow and how we've built more locals. Having it be a place that people want to come hang out at and enjoy has been critical to the market's success.
Are there volunteer opportunities at the Port Townsend Farmers Market?
There are. We really need help setting up the market and taking down the market. Because we make it kind of a free event every week, we bring out lots of picnic tables, canopies, garbage cans, all of these things that there's just myself and Don Landstra, who does the music, and we have to haul out thousands of pounds of stuff back and forth every week. So we always need help with that. That's from 7 in the morning till 9 or from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. We can always use help with that. And then we have our market information booth where we can always use help. What we're doing now in that information booth is running our Gimme Five program, which I think you know about, which is where we match food benefits at the market. Our staff in the market is primarily taking care of that. They're either running credit card transactions where people get $20 tokens.
Right.
If you don't bring any cash and you need to use a credit card, you come to the market booth. We swipe it for no fee. You get $20 tokens. They're really cute. They have a picture of our market logo or mascot Flora on there. Spend them at any vendor and you get cash back. But if you're on food benefits, and after the financial crash in 2008, we saw a giant spike in folks on food benefits. We now can match some of those food benefits. So for people who come to the market and they're really worried about that budget, they're really trying to make their food dollars go as far as possible, we wanted there to be no barrier for folks to be able to shop at the market. So if you come with your food benefits, if you have $10 of food stamp money, we will give you an extra $5. For $20, we give you two extra $5. So suddenly, you know, on a $20 budget, you're getting $30 worth of produce.
Great.
And then we're also matching, which is called WIC, which is Women and Infant Children, and Senior Benefit Coupons, and we match those one-to-one. So we basically double your money. And folks have been using them so much more. This year, they use so many more because of our matching program that the state gave our county more of them. And it's kind of like the more we use, the more the state will give us.
So if somebody needs to find out more about it, they can come to the information booth at the market and get more information. Is that right?
Yep. And we're a nonprofit, so we're accepting donations to that program. The more money we can get for that program, the more folks we can match.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining me on Glorious Food. It sounds like we're going to have a great spring at the Port Townsend Farmers Market.
Thanks so much, Mara.
And now, boys and girls, it's time for Adventures with Food. So we're about to go out to the yard behind Sheila Bender's house to pick nettles, to make nettle soup. And the first thing I want to do is go over the list of ingredients that are going to go into our soup, because when we're done picking the nettles, we just have to get to work. So this is what the soup's going to be made out of. 4 big handfuls of freshly harvested nettle leaves, 1 onion, 2 cloves of garlic, 2 potatoes, a little bit of salt, Parmesan cheese, olive oil, and some vegetable or chicken broth. And with a scowling, his pockets and a smile on his face, he followed where the beans were, fell in the nettles. Today we are out here behind the garden fence at Sheila Bender's house. And Sheila, what are we doing here?
Well, you are going to teach me how to harvest nettles and cook from them. I've wanted to. I watch them come up every spring, but they scare me because I know they sting. Supposedly they don't if you know how to pick them and cook them. And that's what I want to learn.
Okay. The first thing that you have to do if you're going to pick nettles is put on a pair of rubber gloves.
And we are both wearing long pants and rubber shoes.
And long sleeve shirts.
So we're well protected.
We are well protected. And we are going to cut the tops off of all of these nettles right here behind your
fence.
And
by top, you mean the first...
Well, there's a little bud on the top,
mm-hmm.
and then there are 2 leaves that stick out that are kind of small, and then there are 2 more bigger leaves that stick out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going for, the bud and the first 2 sets of leaves on top of it. The nettle soup recipe we're cooking comes from Umbria, and according to the recipe, we need 4 good handfuls. So we're just going to pick like a half a bag.
Okay.
And that's all we're going to need. Now, when you pick them, look under the leaves as you go, because there may be some little snails hiding, and it's a good idea to try and keep them out of the house if you can. So we're right here on the edge of the nettle field.
So far, nothing hurts.
You can always pretty much just take the tops as long as they keep growing. Once they turn, they flower, that's it. Yeah.
So there's a few months yet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's see how many you got in there.
By my handfuls, it's pretty good.
Well, you have a smaller hand than I do.
So that's a very imprecise recipe.
It's very Italian.
All right.
So there you go.
So what do you think?
I think we have enough. I think let's call that nettle.
All right.
We're done.
So now we're here in your kitchen, Sheila, and we are about to clean the nettles in your kitchen sink.
Still wearing our gloves.
Why don't you go ahead and fill up the kitchen sink with water. And then we will get the nettles in there and give them a good soak.
So we're putting them in the colander just to drain off the extra water?
Drain off the extra water and give all of the bugs a chance to have a nice little swim in the sink. They are going to go into the sink for a second rinse.
All right.
See, we got there's a lot of dirt and some bugs in the sink.
And I'm not getting stung, and I'm patting them all down and swirling them
around.
And
you're just wearing a pair of little blue latex gloves. Right. See, it's not that bad.
And I am very proud of myself for doing this.
You are very, very brave. Did you
get
stung?
I did just get stung. And you know what? It wasn't that bad. I'm initiated. All right, I think that's not bad.
All right, I think we're good. I think that those are really pretty, pretty darn clean. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to cut the bud tops and the bigger leaves off and discard the stems. We can do it in three snips, see?
Would the stems be bad if they got in?
No, they're just stemmy.
Okay, I hear the water boiling, and I'm going to put these nettles. I now have stronger gloves on.
So we want to get them all submerged, and then we're just going to let them come back to a boil and give them like 3 minutes. And you now can take off your gloves.
I can?
You can. There is no sting.
They've become like my security blanket. I don't know.
Okay. And they're not quite back. They're just coming to a boil now, so we got 3 minutes on the clock, okay? Okay, so that is 3 minutes and maybe a little more, which is fine. And to prove that there is no sting in these nettles, I'm running one nettle under the cold water so I don't burn myself. And I am now holding it in my hand. I have not received a single sting. Go ahead.
I'm trying it tomorrow. Wow, this is just soft greens.
Okay.
Cool.
Now we're going to drain them. So here I am pouring the nettles. Oh, oops. Now, you see, I was supposed to save that, and I forgot to get a bowl for underneath it. The sound you are listening to on the radio is the sound of nettle tea, which is very, very good for you, draining down the sink.
Instead of into a big yellow bowl.
So bad on me. We're just letting them drain, and now would you like to do the honors and squeeze the water out? Perfect.
All right, now I have a softball-sized lump.
Okay, well, that's it. Now we're going to start making the nettle soup. And the first thing that we need to do is to take these two potatoes and peel them. We're going to cut these potatoes into a half-inch dice. So now we're going to parboil these two potatoes that are cut in a half-inch dice.
For how long?
Oh, until they're about half-cooked. I'd say about 4 or 5 minutes.
All right, I'm giving you four.
Actually, what I'd like you to do now is chop this onion.
And how fine do we need it chopped?
Like in a 1/4-inch dice. Not real fine. I'm heating up the pan, and I'm going to give it the bottom of the pan a good drizzle with some extra virgin olive oil. I'm going to start this on about medium and let it get hot, and then we're going to go ahead and put the onion in. You hear that? We got 2 cloves of peeled garlic, and when the onions are done sautéing right at the last minute of the onions, we're going to go ahead and press these 2 cloves of garlic into the onions and give it about a minute before we move on to the next step. The potatoes are about half cooked. I just tasted one. It was not crunchy any longer, but it certainly bit back at me when I bit it. So we're going to go ahead and drain these. And I'm going to stop their cooking with a little cold water for right now. The reason to rinse a vegetable after you blanch it in cold water is to stop the cooking.
right? Like noodles, they do that.
Right, same thing.
I'm going to go ahead and chop the ball of nettles now. So all I'm doing is just taking a big kitchen knife and just slicing this ball every quarter of an inch and rough chop them the other way. Yeah. This is totally a country kind of soup. It's got very few ingredients. And it's not supposed to end up looking real refined. You're supposed to be able to see what's in it.
I think we will be able to.
Okay, so next we are going to go ahead and are we ready to press the garlic in? Here we go.
Looks it to me.
Ta-da! Sheila, would you like to keep that moving around for the next minute, please?
It's smelling good.
It does smell good.
Would you like to bring the chopped nettles over?
Sure.
Here they go.
I love how easy they were to chop once they were squeezed dry.
Yep. There they go. Get everything mixed well together. And now we're going to put in 2 cups of chicken broth. And I'm just using a 1-quart carton of chicken broth from the grocery store. Although if you do this with homemade broth, that's probably about as good as it gets. And the other thing that we could have done if I hadn't stupidly accidentally drained all of the nettle cooking water away is that this first little bit, instead of it being chicken broth, could very, very well have been the nettle tea. And that would have been really nice. So there goes the broth into there. We're going to bring it up to a simmer. And then we're going to cook it for about 10 minutes at a simmer to sort of reduce some of the liquid in there. So we've been cooking this for about 10 minutes, and the level of the broth has gone down some, and you can see that the nettles look more cooked, right?
Mm-hmm. They look great.
They do look, and they smell wonderful. So we're going to put in the potatoes that we parboiled. That looks about like 2 cups of diced potatoes.
It does.
And why don't you give that a good stir?
Now it's going to get more chicken broth?
And now it's going to get more chicken broth. I may use the rest of this quart. We'll see.
Yeah, because it looks a little like stew right now.
Right now it looks a little like stew, so here we go. Okay, so it's just come back to a boil after the last addition of the chicken broth, and I'm turning it down to low so that it can simmer for about 10 minutes, and then we'll be ready to sit down and eat. So the first thing we have to do is pour everybody a little wine.
Honey, would you like to have some soup with us?
Sure, looks great.
So we are being joined at the dinner table for our soup tasting by Sheila's husband, Kurt. So Kurt, here's a glass of wine. You've had absolutely nothing to do with the preparation of the soup, is that correct?
That is correct.
And you have agreed that you will give us your complete, unbiased first reaction to the eating of this nettle soup, is that correct?
That's correct.
This soup is not done until we do a few things. So we are going to put, and this is what the Italian recipe says, 2 handfuls of Parmesan cheese. I'm stirring the Parmesan cheese into this beautiful pot of soup. There it goes. And next, I'm taking one of these beautiful croutons. It's just a half a slice of dried bread that was getting a little stale, so I made it into croutons, and we're going to put 2 of those on the bottom of this bowl. And then we're going to put a big ladleful of soup on top of it. And then we are going to put a small drizzle of olive oil on top of that. And it's up to everybody to decide how much salt and pepper they want in their soup at this point.
Thank you.
All right, so everybody has turned their attention to Kurt.
Oh, Lord.
We're now going to watch him taste the first bite of his nettle soup.
Trying to get all the flavors in one spoon here. A little bread, a little cheese. Wow, that's good. Perfect.
What's it taste like?
Well, I can't identify the vegetable.
Kids, but, it's nettles.
Right, but it's not a familiar taste to me.
Okay.
But it's a pleasant taste, and it's a nice balance. It's just a nice balance of texture and flavor.
Great.
It's a very nice-looking soup, too.
It's kind of a hearty yet delicate soup, if that makes sense.
Was this a satisfying meal?
Very satisfying. I enjoyed every bite.
I like foraging. I feel like I'm getting away with something. And another thing is, if you make a dish like this with foraged materials in it and bring it to a dinner party...
If it's tasty,
people pay attention to it. It's something different.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
It is.
Thanks for going on this first of our food adventures with me, Sheila. Thank you.
It was a delight. I learned a lot and ate a good meal.
If you have a great idea for a food adventure, drop me an email at gloriousfood@kptz.org. Bring it on, baby. Mushroom hunting, making Icelandic rye bread, digging razor clams, roasting and eating crickets. I'm game for anything at least once, and I'll report about it on a future episode. Thin River is a 33-acre organic family farm and artisan cidery located along a beautiful restored Salmon Creek out in the Chimicum Valley. It's about 12 miles south of Port Townsend. They grow a mix of vegetables, and they grow flowers, and they have chickens and ducks and pigs and goats. They grow raspberries, blackberries, strawberries, black currants, and huge, delicious blueberries. Today, we're talking with Thin River farmer Janet Aubin. Let's call her right now.
Hello, this is Janet.
Hey, Janet. It's Mara Lathrop at Glorious Food. I'm calling for the farm report. What's going on out there?
Well, it's another sunny day. We've just been having the most fantastic spring weather.
That is true. What's growing?
We have fresh greens coming out of our greenhouses right now. A good rotation in before we transplant the tomatoes. So, lots of food getting ready, going out to the farmers markets. Just starting with Saturday farmers market, so it feels like we're really in the season now.
What do you like best about spring out at Thin River?
My favorite part about spring on the farm is seeing all the perennials coming back to life. The perennials really hold us together here, and I think we're probably most well known for our blueberries, but raspberries, apples, strawberries, and after seeing all those plants make it through the winter, seeing them push out little buds, the cute tiny little leaves,
And the beautiful blossoms, yeah.
Yeah, and then just knowing that all the fruit that's to come in the summer.
That sounds wonderful. Thanks for the farm report. Have a wonderful spring and summer, and we'll see you out at the farm sometime before too long, okay?
Okay, thanks for letting everyone know what's going on.
Thank you. Bye.
Raspberries, strawberries, the good wines we brew. Here's to the girls of the countryside, the ones we drink 'em to.
This is a song about vegetables. They keep you regular. They're real good for you.
Thanks for joining us today on Glorious Food. I'm your host, Mara Lathrop. Thank you to CJ Lazenby, who's my producer. Join us again next time. And in the meanwhile, remember, hey, everybody's got to eat.
And the chances are good. All the vegetable will respond to you.
Some people don't go for prunes. I don't know. I've always found that if they...